You're listening to Face Off, episode 106, recorded January 31st, 2011. This episode of Face Off is brought to you by AgileTask. AgileTask is a task tracking application featuring an agile workflow, tagging for organization and achievements. AgileTask, your lightweight personal backlog tool. Check it out by going to agiletask.me. And RocketShipIt. RocketShipIt, the complete web-based multi-carrier shipping solution for small businesses and developers. Shipping rates, integrated tracking, and labels for UPS, FedEx, and USPS shippers. RocketShipIt is shipping made easy. Go to rocketshipit.it. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I am your other host, Mark Sanborn.
Coming to you live from Whitehall, Montana. I'm over in Bozeman, Montana, up in the great white snowy north, getting really cold up here. In this podcast, we talk about web technology, things like web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. If you want to see any of our notes or links from anything we talk about in this show, go to faceoffshow.com. We always keep good show notes there. Want people to check it out. Let's get into some follow-ups. I realized last week, after we had recorded the show, that we actually forgot to do an update about our 30-day challenge that we had talked about.
Yeah, so this is the second week in on our 30-day challenge to eat a healthy breakfast within 30 minutes of waking up. Basically, so, you know, a breakfast.
Yeah, exactly.
Eating a meal, I guess.
How are you doing in this challenge, Mark Sanborn?
I have not missed a day.
Excellent.
I mean, there was a day that it was pushing, like, well, you know, I got up late, but I mean, it was.
Yeah, no, I know.
I ate food within 30 minutes, yeah, I guess.
Me too. I think
some,
I know.
Some would consider it lunch, but.
I'll say it straight up. I slept until like 11:30 that day. I think you did about the same. But I did get up and eat lunch right away. Well, breakfast. The whole point for me really is not, I mean, I want to get up early, but on the weekends, that's kind of hard to do. But really, what for me, it's like I want to, you know, within a close period of time that I get up, eat a big breakfast. I've kind of even dropped this sort of like, you know, super healthy thing. Like, I just want to make sure I eat a big breakfast, not, you know, like none of this shortcutting like donuts and stuff. Like, I just want a big breakfast to sort of, you know, wake me up and get me going for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I've been, I think I talked about it in our first episode talking about the challenge is my breakfast has to be really fast because I tend to wake up and shower and basically have to leave the house. I don't really wake up in enough time to, and I thought this would get me up a little bit earlier, but it gets me up maybe 5 minutes earlier. Yeah. But the nice thing is my breakfast only takes like 3 minutes to make, so.
Yeah, but how do you eat it?
But yeah.
It takes more than five. Oh.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a total of like probably 6 or 7 minutes.
It's tough.
But it's pretty quick. And I'm enjoying it so far.
Nice. So. Nice. Me too. My stomach is still adjusting. I mean, I haven't been regularly eating breakfast for years. I mean, I think back in high school was the last time I regularly ate a breakfast. So my stomach kind of has, as soon as I eat, like, there's some times it just is not super happy with me. It's like, oh, this isn't coffee. What are you thinking? But in general, yeah, I've ate a pretty, you know, big breakfast, usually consisting of, like, you know, 2 poached eggs and toast. Sometimes it's 2 poached eggs and something else. But in general, yeah, I think I'm doing a couple things, and we'll talk about the next thing I'm sort of doing, kind of challenge-like, kind of not the next. But all in told, I mean, in the past week, I've watched my average weight go down about 5 pounds.
Nice. I'm also keeping track of my weight, and it's 5 to 8 pounds.
Right, yeah, I get a variance of like 8 to 5. Like, that's, you know, about average. So, I think it totally helps. Like, for me, I don't eat big lunches now. I used to go buy lunch every day, and I'm not buying lunch every day. If I do go get lunch, sometimes I get something small, or even if I do get sort of what I, you know, the size of something I would usually eat, it tends to fill me up a lot more. But I don't get the tired stuff. It doesn't hit me quite as hard, I think, because my metabolism sort of ramped up from eating so early in the morning. But in general,
I've noticed more energy.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of it is I used to have a big crash after lunch just every day because I'd work. And then at 11 o'clock, and it was one of those things, 11 o'clock on the dot, I had to get lunch or I was, you know, a pretty crabby guy. And then I'd eat a big lunch and it was like, wham, like I'd just sort of like be so tired and trying to wake up. So now like I definitely around noon is when I get hungry. If I do get hungry, if I eat a big enough breakfast, I don't get hungry for lunch. And when I do get lunch, you know, like, I am trying to get, you know, things like I'll go to the salad bar and get like fresh broccoli and carrots and stuff and try and just get a small little snack of sort of munchy vegetables. But yeah, it's definitely increased my energy. Well, that and along with, the thing I want to talk about next too. But in general, I'm really liking the breakfast thing. What I'm finding is I have a feeling, poached eggs are going to get old here any day now, at least for every day. So
we're about halfway through. Do you think at the end of the 30 days you're going to continue with the habit? Or
well, I guess what I'm hoping is that at the end of 30 days, I'm going to be hungry when I get up in the morning. So for the longest time, I was just not hungry when I got up in the morning. And so this has kind of helped, I think, my habits. It used to be like at midnight, I was so hungry. You know, I was just ridiculous. Now, you know, I'm not quite as hungry. I'm able to sort of, you know, handle it, when it gets later in the day. And when I wake up in the morning, I am hungry. So I'm hoping that trend will continue because it's not so much that I want to keep doing this, but, you know, I can't keep, it needs to change to the point where I'm not sort of forcing down food because it's kind of what it is right now. If I eat right when I get up, I'm like forcing food down my throat and it gets kind of annoying after a while because for the first half an hour after I eat, I don't, you know, feel very good. I'm kind of like, oh man, oh, because I had to, you know, sort of force myself to eat. But I really wanted to because I think this is a healthy habit to have.
Fair enough. So what's the next thing you've been trying to do?
So the next thing, I've been thinking about doing this at work for a while. And then my coworker, Sean Cleveland, just out of the blue, I think he read an article or something, he out of the blue did it, was convert your workstation to a stand-up station. So instead of, you know, sitting down in a chair all day, I'm standing up using my computer. You know, I'm on average, you know, out of 8-hour work day, I'm probably standing for at least 6. You know, I have meetings and stuff sometimes. And the meetings are kind of nice because after a while your feet start hurting standing that long because they're not, you know, very tough. In general, so like we have this table and I took my little work laptop and I hooked it up to another monitor so that, you know, I'm trying to be ergonomic about it. I want the monitor to be sort of as close to eye level as possible. Mine's a little low. I can't get it any higher right now, but my keyboard being at the right height was very critical. So you want your hands to be parallel with the ground. So getting that height just right worked well. And then I'm using like some books I stacked up to, for my mouse. And, again, I can't tell which is which, but between eating breakfast and standing up all day, I mean, I have a ton of energy. I mean, you think I'd be exhausted from standing up all day, but, I have just a ridiculous amount of energy. I mean, usually by the time I get home, you know, we eat dinner and I kind of like sit on the couch and sort of zone out, you know, by the time we do face off, I'm usually kind of like, oh man, I need to wake up for face off. But that's not the case anymore at all. I mean, I'm coming home. I'm still like zing, zing, zing all over the place. Quite a bit of energy. And so I think those two things, I think, you know, and I haven't decided on the stand-up station yet. I think I'm going to try and buying a desk that supports standing up. So there's some really nice ones because standing up all day is kind of hard. But you can get these sort of desks that have like a little hand crank or a motor that will raise themselves up, you know, from like a normal desk height up. But they are ridiculously expensive. So, I mean, I can't afford one personally. And right now, really, I don't think I can convince work to buy me one because they're like 800 plus. 800 for sort of the cheapest. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to do it at home too. I might see if I can rig something up here because the hardest part is that your heels hurt because when I walk, I put a lot of weight on the balls of my feet, like the front part. But when I'm standing up, you know, my entire weight is on the back of my foot. And after, you know, the first 4 or 5 hours, your feet start to really hurt, especially the heels.
Do you have one of those standing mats that you can stand on?
No. I'm thinking,
have you tried that?
I was thinking about getting one. You can get, there's some really expensive ones at Costco, but there's also some pretty cheap ones. our coworker Paul like took that. We bought a server a week ago and it came with, you know, sort of these foam like things are surrounding it. He like hacked them up with a pocket knife today and taped them together for a foot pad. And it was pretty comfortable. So I might. Yeah. I mean, I think if I did this in the long term, I'd have to get one. Yeah.
Another option might be to get kind of a stand-up desk that doesn't do the cranking, and then have, you know, a normal desk and maybe have a monitor on each if you have two monitors, and then maybe plug your laptop, put your laptop on the tall one, the stand-up desk or whatever, and then plug into the monitor and have an extra keyboard laying by, and then when you get tired, you can go back to your
to do is a couple other coworkers got caught kind of excited about it too after Sean did it and then I did it. So, I mean, it might be like I was looking, you can get sort of, you know, you can get stand up computer desks, you know, that not the ones that crank up, but ones that are just high for like $200. There's like an IKEA one that looks pretty nice. People say that is a sort of stand up height for $200. So I was, you know, maybe like maybe we could foot a bill for that for like a $200 station and then just put a monitor on it. And since most of us have laptops at work, if you want to go stand up for a while, you could go do that and then go back to your desk. We'll have to see. I don't know. Between that and, I mean, like, it's funny. There's so many things not good about sitting all day.
Right.
I watched a documentary about sort of, you know, obesity in the United States last night with my wife, and it totally increased my resolve today to keep going on the stand-up station thing.
Good.
Yeah, it's you know, and the funny part is you think it would be totally uncomfortable and terrible and stuff, but like what you find is this is like what's funny, I think what attracts most people to it is we'd be standing up, put on our headphones, and I'd be like listening to music and stuff, and like, I wouldn't even know it. Like I just start like dancing while I work and stuff. It's a total workout. It's great. It's like the ball but plus, you know.
Something that I might try would be doing like 50-50, like, you know, when you're at work, you sit down, but maybe at home you build a stand-up desk and at home you stand up. Because I do a lot of, you know, sitting on the computer at work, but then I come home and do a lot of projects on the side and do a lot of programming. It might be worth or a way to split it up a little bit.
Right. That was kind of my thought. You know, it's like, you know, so here at work, like right now we're recording, I'm on the exercise ball, which is, you know, probably better for you than just a chair. So my thought was, you know, if I stand up at work all day and then come home and when I'm doing, you know, work at home and stuff like that, if I'm on the ball at least, I just, you know, like you're right. If you're sitting at a desk at work all day and then coming home and doing work and sitting at a desk at work all night, like just that's, you know, that can be good for you. I always think about like what, you know, like the blood clots in your leg and stuff that you get from not doing it. Also, the other thing that helps is it's helped with my concentration because I'm a pacer. I like to pace around a lot. So like I'll be working on something, you know, and the second I need to sort of like step back and think about something, I just start pacing, which really helps me concentrate for some reason. So it works out really well.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really like it. I encourage anyone out there, or if anyone out there is also doing it and has any tips or just general thoughts about it, I'd love to hear from you guys because it was something that I thought was going to be really hard, but in general, I'm really liking it and it's working out pretty well for me. I think with the breakfast and the whole stand-up thing, I've had a lot of energy and it's one of those things where, you know, it's kind of interesting that it worked out that way. So do a challenge. I mean, this was like a week long. I did the stand-up thing sort of as a week long challenge to myself. I was like, well, I'll just try this for a week and see what I think of it, you know? And so far I really like it.
Nice.
Yeah. So let's move on to the other thing I want to talk about real quick and we'll get into our geek tool was that in our Christmas episode 45, our Christmas list a year ago, in 2009, right? Or no?
Yeah, it would have been 9.
Okay. We talked about we had our Christmas list for geeks and one of those items was an iFi Share 2 GB Wi-Fi SD card. And the thing is when we did that, we were kind of like, well, we don't have one, but we've heard a lot of really cool things. It looks awesome. And the truth is I've had a couple friends that had one and I, my personal self finally got one, last week. And I have to confirm, very cool device, in general. It's awesome. I have it, I keep it in my, DSLR here at home. And so like, you know, trying to encourage myself to take pictures of me and my wife, like around the house and stuff. And it's awesome. You just snap a picture and your computer just has software running on it that talks to the iFi and it uploads like faster than I was in the front room, which is right next to my office. And I took a picture and I walked back to the computer to see how far it was done uploading and it was already done uploading. Wow. So, you know, very cool product. I would totally recommend it to anyone that was, even on the fence on it. I only got a 2 GB one cause they were on sale, for $15 and it's a really awesome, awesome, awesome device.
That's probably all you need though, because it's it transfers it and then it optionally deletes it from the card. So it's like a never ending card.
Yeah, exactly.
Ways, I mean, as long as you're near your computer.
Yeah, and that's kind of
we saw these guys at CES, and they seemed like really good guys. And I bought one for a gift for someone, but I didn't really hear any feedback, I guess. So I'm glad that you got it and you liked it. So
yeah, it's amazing what they can fit in small size stuff these days. I mean, I'm like, let me pull it out here. Let me got my camera right here. It's like, you know, it looks just like a regular SD card. The crazy part was I have this new sort of like, it's kind of like a flip cam, but it's about a Sanyo or camera, which brand it is. Oh yeah, Sanyo one. And it's a newer camera. And it actually knew that there was a Wi-Fi in it. Like, it knew it wasn't just a regular SD card. It knew it was an Hi-Fi card. So,
interesting.
Yeah, that was really cool. Like, popped up this little thing, like, letting me know when, the Wi-Fi was on to transfer the pictures and stuff. So that was really cool. The one I got also has geo. So I think there's a GPS chip in here as well. So it'll geotag your photos, or maybe your computer does. I'm not sure, but... very cool device. Totally. If you're thinking about it, if you're on the fence, pull the trigger, because they're pretty cool.
All right. So let's get into our official geek tool, which is the Yak Tracks.
Yeah. So you and I live in the great snowy north, which actually hasn't had that crazy of weather. It looks like the East Coast is getting all the cool storms this year. It seems I like the snowy cold weather. But one of the hazards of snowy cold weather is snowy, icy sidewalks and various other walking surfaces. So I got some new snow boots this year. And the truth is, they really don't have a lot of traction on them. I was kind of disappointed. I like everything else about them, except for they're a little more slippery than I would like. So I ended up buying a pair of these. These Yak Tracks they're like these sort of rubber cleats that you wrap over the bottom of your shoe, and they have kind of like just rubber with this sort of wire wrapped around it, designed to give you traction on the snow and ice.
So you can take a boot that doesn't have some super good, awesome traction and make it
right
have traction.
Or even some shoes, like if you have some dress shoes which have like really flat soles and you got to walk around, like, well, where I'm at Montana State, there's some sidewalks that are on some pretty steep hills, and if they have ice, it was kind of a sport when we used to walk when I used to live in the dorms, when I went to school there, we'd walk up this giant hill, and it was kind of a sport to like keep your eye open to see who would slip and fall that day, because they didn't have Yak Tracks. And so I was looking at these, and I have a couple friends with a couple pairs, and I thought, if I'm walking to the bus, which I've been riding the bus this year, and I walk about a half mile every day to the bus stop, and there's a couple times there where I almost lost it. I haven't slipped and fallen on my butt yet, but I got pretty close. So I bought some Yak Tracks, and the crazy part is the Yak Tracks are about medium sort of in the aggressiveness. There's Ice Trekkers shoe chains, which like are chains on the bottom with like cleats sticking out that actually stick to the ice. And there's even some sort of really lightweight ones that you can get for pretty cheap that just kind of have almost like, they look like little thumbtacks on the bottom. But be careful on the snow, because I know a lot of people that have I don't know a lot of people, but I've heard a lot of stories of people I know that fallen, break their tailbone or hit their head and have, some really bad head damage and stuff. So if you're walking on icy sidewalks and stuff, get some Yak Tracks and make sure that you don't fall.
All right, let's get into our web apps.
All right.
This episode. The first one is called abtest.com.
Yep,
.com. And... what do I like about this one is it's so, first of all, it's not like an A/B testing like toolkit. It's right. Actually just you upload screenshots of things that you've tested. And so what I really like about it is you can go here and kind of get some feedback of what other people have tried to improve their sites. So what you do is you upload a screenshot of the before and the treatment page. So and then you upload what the results were, like if you had a 10% uptick in conversion rate, or you had improvements in signups or registrations, you'd post that. So
yeah,
very simple site.
Yeah, it's cool to see, like, because it's first of all, it's people giving you their sort of test results. So it's not, this is not what the site you use to do your own A/B test, but it's like, hey, we're a website. This is the A/B test that we did. And this is sort of the, baseline and then the improvement. And it's a really cool way to sort of see the way people are modifying their sites and what they're seeing to sort of increase conversion.
Yeah, there's really nothing much more to it than that, other than it's really fun to browse around and see what people have done. And the funny thing too is sometimes it'll be like, it's almost like a game. Like, what did they change? I don't see anything.
Yeah.
And they like changed the color of one button and like they got a 10% conversion increase.
Yeah. Like this National University one, 17% improvement on a landing page just by sort of changing the colors of the form to a brighter orange and moving a picture and moving some text. Like that's crazy. What a great improvement.
Totally.
Yeah, I'd be totally pumped to fire them, like a small change like that. And the only way to find that out is through A/B testing.
So you may ask yourself, well, I want to start doing my own A/B tests.
Oh, man. So I have to write like this really complex logic in my web page and do all this junk. That's a lot of work to do A/B tests, Mark.
So that's where this next web app comes in, which is Optimizely. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Optimizely is this really cool web app. We've heard some rumblings about it, but primarily I saw a blog post by Alan Branch, and he raved about Optimizely, so I took the time to actually try it out. This is a really cool web app. What it does is you put in your URL, and what it does is it loads your website up into Optimizely and then lets you sort of just tweak things like increase font size, change the color of a button, move around, things like that. And then what you want to do is you can save those different variations of website. You can have up to as many as you want. You know, here's the original and then all these different variations. And then when you go to actually run the test, all you have to do is they give you a little snippet of Optimizely.js that you put in your website. And what that little snippet does is actually apply all the different changes randomly and record things like people hitting a page. So if you say, okay, the ultimate goal is for people to go to my download page. But here are all the different versions of my homepage. So in Optimizely, you'll go in and it's kind of a WYSIWYG, like you'll grab a div, move it around, or grab a div and say edit text and make the text bigger. And so then Optimizely gives you this JS. And when someone goes to your website, Optimizely runs the JS and says, okay, well, we'll give him one of these different variations or the baseline. And then, sort of track whether or not it converts for you. And I mean, it's so easy. It's creepy. Like I was thinking if you want to do A/B testing, I was like, oh my goodness, you have to write it into your web app, to try the different variations and then also record whether or not that variation did anything. It'd be kind of, it's for such a simple little thing that it sounds like that's a lot of logic in the back end of your web app. But with Optimizely, it's so dead easy. They do have a 30-day trial on any of their plans. Their plans, it does cost money, and this is a web app that is worth paying if you can afford it. A project like AgileTask, really, right now, it's not worth it for us to purchase this. But I think we might totally try it for 30 days and see what we get. Maybe we'll get enough conversions that, it might be worth our time to buy it. But it's so dead easy to use and very cool. And check it out. The best part is you can just go to a website, put in your URL, and play around with the different ways to vary it without even signing up at all. I mean, you can just sort of use their editor and see how easy it is to use without, signing up or putting your name down or anything.
Yeah, I like their motto is A/B testing you actually use. Just because, it's so simple. Like you said, it's, you might do one A/B test and be like, man, that was a lot of work, and kind of put it aside. But this is something that you can actually just put your URL and start making.
Yeah, and it's all JavaScript. So like if they have JavaScript enabled, they just get the default. And it's kind of crazy what you can do with JavaScript because like I was moving divs around and stuff and I was like, wow, yeah, you can totally move it around by just including this JavaScript. That's crazy. So check it out. It's totally cool. And if you're doing a web app, A/B testing is where it's at. So check it out, optimizely.com. Huge fan. In the win column for Jay Robbins. So hey, if you guys have some news, a follow-up geek tool or web app you want us to look at, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can tweet us out. We are at faceoffshow or email studio@faceoffshow.com. Let us know if you have something you want to talk about because we'd love to talk about what you want to hear about. And with that, Mark, let's get into our topic this week, which I'm actually pretty excited about. Kind of has to do with our web apps a little bit. Is forms, right? I mean, we're kind of looking at like forms and ways to look at and improve your forms because I'll be honest with you, I'm a person that didn't put a whole lot of thought into my forms. It's kind of like, oh, just put data fields down and it submits, right? This is the part of the web app that, doesn't really matter. It's just a stupid form. Everyone hates forms anyway. So just put it on there and submit it. And that's not the case at all, right?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about optimizing forms, making them suck less. You know, nobody really likes filling out forms. There's apps and plugins that you can download that'll automatically fill them out for you. You know, people just hate them that much. We're also going to be talking about optimizing for conversion. You know, are people abandoning the form halfway through and things like that, trying to get people to either entice them to, you know, start the form or entice them to finish it at, you know, after they're already through it. So totally. Why forms? You know, forms are the reason you have a website. It's either a registration, a sign up, comments on your blog. Forms are really where you get the input from the user, especially nowadays when, you know, a lot of these sites like Twitter and Facebook and things are, I mean, they're all driven on user content.
Totally.
So, you know, the forms can be sometimes the most valuable pieces of your website. Things like the shopping cart and getting through, making a purchase. These are the things that bring money to your site. So if you're thinking about optimizing your site in terms of conversion and things like that, forms are the place you really need to think about first.
Totally. You could have, you could have the most awesome web app or service in the world, but if your form really, really, really sucks, then you will have less people sign up for it. I mean, it's like a time and money argument, you know?
Yeah, if you're going to spend time optimizing on anything, pick the forms. They're so crucial and critical to your site that there's even web apps that will test simply the size and color and style of your form button.
Totally.
One web app is called Ninja Button. You can check them out. The first thing you want to do when you're optimizing forms and talking about optimizing forms is ask questions. We're going to talk a little bit about this later, but you know, sometimes with analytics, you get to this habit of just checking things like, oh, did I get a sign up? Did I get somebody to register? But it's more, you need to ask questions about your form. Don't just say, well, I was reading an article and they said if I make the form labels bold, then people are more likely to fill it out or something. Right. You need to really ask more questions. So the four main questions that you can kind of drive other questions about, just to get you started thinking, brainstorming about questions you could ask are, you know, what did they do? How did they do it? Why did they do it? And could they do it? Could they do it? Meaning, you know, maybe Opera users, for example, maybe they don't even see your form. Maybe you've got some JavaScript or something that they can't read or something, and they can't even fill it out even if they wanted to.
Right.
Questions you could ask are like, how many visitors saw the form correctly? How many visitors started to fill out the form? How far down did the visitors get? How long did visitors linger at each field? How many visitors submitted the form, and how many visitors submitted the form but missed the required fields?
Boy, that's a great question, because I know in every web app I've done, I never really sort of like took an interest in marking if someone submitted and there were required fields not filled out, because I would think that if people implemented that more with their CAPTCHAs, they would realize what a pain CAPTCHAs are and that they need to get rid of them.
Absolutely. If you're not asking these questions and you're not tracking and monitoring this stuff, you would have no idea if your CAPTCHA is just, I mean, I've been on sites where the CAPTCHA is just, I try 8 times and I still can't do it and I give up and leave. If you're monitoring this kind of stuff, you would see that, and you'd see that the CAPTCHA needs to go.
Or if it's so terrible and it has like the little, you know, are you blind or something, and you could push the button to play it. I always play it instead of having to hear it, because it's like, goodness, that's terrible.
Oh, that's a good tip. So conversion, when we talk about conversion, this usually just means, you know, the goal of your site. So back when I was kind of really blogging and writing a lot of articles, I was kind of an analytics junkie. But looking back at it, I found that really all I was doing is logging in and seeing like page views. I was never, you know, setting goals of, I was never really measuring conversion, or doing any segmentation. Like, you know, when I was running a blog, I wasn't like our Dig visitors or our Reddit visitors more likely to subscribe to my blog than just say Google searches.
Totally.
It's really important. If you're going to do analytics, you really, really need to set the goals. It's probably the most important thing you could do as far as analytics. It really helps you do things. Once you have goals, you can actually set and see like, are. So one example is, you know how, you know, in Google Analytics, it shows you what people have for browsers and things. Mm-hmm. But if you have a goal set and you notice that, you know, like Opera users or Chrome users are, you know, have a very low rate of subscription or registration, it may mean that they can't see your registration page correctly, or, you know, they're getting a different impression of your site for some reason.
Totally.
So, you know, check that out. Google Analytics is a great way to start. It's a free app. And then the other thing is segmentation. Are people in a different region, you know, more or less likely to register or, you know, complete the action that you're wanting them to do? Mm-hmm. It may be the fact that your site is really slow in Asia, for example, yeah, and you may need to, you know, have a CDN or something like that. Mm-hmm. Another one is for segmentation is if you're advertising, or, you know, especially if you're, you're paying for advertising, you need to know if that advertising is working. So it's a good way to segment. Also, yeah. You know, segmentation applies to forms, you know, people of different languages or different country come from different countries. They may not understand the way you've laid out your form versus, you know, US or totally. Vice versa.
Yeah, that's something you got to think of.
So next thing we'll talk about is once you kind of got your analytics set up and you're tracking the conversion, you need to analyze your data properly. Always compare. And that's the beauty of A-B split testing. You're always comparing the treatment page to the baseline.
Totally.
You should always compare your form to a previous form or how many registrations you've had kind of in the past. You know, when you're looking at analytics, think of words like better, faster, stickier, heavier, weaker, later.
Mm-hmm.
Basically words that end in er. sometimes you get caught up just looking at analytics and be like, we got 8 users here and we got 4 users that didn't fill it out, but it doesn't really mean much if it, you know, you're not making improvements or you're not comparing it.
Totally. Totally. And you need to have a baseline to compare. You can't just, you know, you just not like out of nowhere. Hey, if I told you like, hey, this website got, you know, 1,000 visitors. It's like, well, compared to what? Like, before were you getting only 5, or before were you getting 5 million a day? I mean, that's, you know, you need to know the difference.
Mm-hmm. Other things you can compare are like groups of visitors, periods of time. You know, is your site converting more during the nighttime, during the day? It might be server load. You know, maybe during the day the form's really slow and people, you know, back out. Mm-hmm. Versions of content, you know, that's kind of the A-B split testing. Segment everything, just reiterate on that. And another little tip is that, you know, don't settle for averages. The kind of saying goes, if Bill Gates walks into a bar all of a sudden, then the average net income is 10 million. So you got to kind of be careful when you're just looking at like the average time spent on your site. It'll say like, you know, 1 minute or something, but it's like, well, that's because there's like a lot of people that click for like 4 seconds and leave, and then there's like people that come in and sit there for 4 or 5 minutes.
Totally. You see that with blogs. You get a ton of people that just come read, you know, maybe if you're lucky the header and, you know, the first sort of bullet point they can see and leave. And then you get people that will actually come and read the whole blog post. But on average, it's like, oh, they were here for 3 minutes. It's like, no, half of the people were there for 10 seconds. Half the people were there for 10 mm-hmm. minutes. You know, look at that and think like, you know, if you're just trying to increase the average of your website, that doesn't make sense. You're trying to turn those 0 second people into 10 minute people and try and, you know, you're trying to really get your average up to 10, not just, you know, you're right. Look at your average. Look at what composes that.
You know, looking back at the 4 questions we briefly touched at the very beginning, why did they do it? It doesn't necessarily mean, like, let's say somebody comes to your site and they leave within 2 seconds. It might not mean that your page is terrible. It's just, why did they do it is the question you need to be asking. Maybe it's because your advertising is misleading and it's not, your advertising is not doing a good enough job of segmenting mm-hmm. the target market. And you're getting people that don't really want to be on your site in the first place. You might have mislinked from a previous page, a link on your own site mm-hmm. and you link to some wrong content and people are like, they get there and they're like, whoa, you know, I've got to get out of here.
Or some websites.
So it doesn't necessarily mean your content's bad. It's just, you know, something you need to be asking questions of why they're doing that.
Right. Like a lot of times it really has nothing. It just has to do with looking at your webpage. Like if I go to a website and a big flash ad decides to take over the screen, I'd back out. I don't care. I'd rather have no information than support people doing, you know, terrible things like that. But you wouldn't know that if you're not looking deep enough as to, you know, and trying to think of the why. Like, go to your website. Why would an experienced web user leave your website? Well, maybe it's because they hate pop-up ads and you're just, you know, using a different medium for a pop-up ad.
Yep. So now we're just going to go through real quick on some of the general tips. Never ask the user anything you already know. This sounds kind of stupid common sense, but there's, you know, I see this a lot in surveys. They'll ask like regions of where you're at and things, so, like things that they could have gotten from your your web browser, things like that. Never ask a user you don't.
Never ask them something that you don't need to make the conversion. So don't, you know, if you don't really need, a particular piece of information, don't ask it. And as you're, again, surveys, like market surveys, are the worst about this. They ask you everything in their dog because they want to do these sort of deep, ridiculous analytics. But at the same time, it's like, asking all that information oftentimes sacrifices conversion. So you're not getting like a good sample anyways.
Yeah. If you don't need an email address to complete the purchase, get it after you got their credit card or whatever, and then email them out. A Posterous is a very good example of this. To sign up to their web app, you actually just email them. They don't even have a sign up form.
Totally.
They might have a sign up form, but I'm not sure if they do, but this is definitely their preferred method of sign up.
Right. You just email them, and then it emails you back sort of your URL, which is based sort of off of your email address. And then I'm sure once you go back to it, you log in and create a username and password and stuff. But I mean, really, that's all they need is to, you know, your email address for you to send posts for them to post. Awesome.
Another tip is think outside the box. If you are, you know, just reading blogs about what other people have done, kind of doing the A/B testing, and you never try anything creative on your own, your conversion rates will be kind of the same as everybody else's. It takes kind of some creativity to really get some huge boosts in conversion. One example from Luke W. is the Mad Lib style of forms, where you don't have like a table of forms or columns of form labels and form. It's actually more of like Mad Libs, where you have a story and you're filling out the story as you're reading it. And he had a 40% increase in conversion by doing that.
Yeah, and it's totally, that's a really good idea of thinking outside the box. It's very whimsical and a really cool idea. I thought that was awesome.
Don't make people log in to buy or convert. This kind of goes with the first one. Don't ask the user something you don't need to make the conversion. But just to reiterate there, use CAPTCHAs at an absolute last resort. If you absolutely have to have one, make sure it's, you know, readable. Maybe don't show it unless you absolutely have to. Like, I know Google will show theirs after like 4 or 5 password failure attempts.
And also check out episode 18, where we talk about CAPTCHA alternatives. We link to an article there and talk about some other things you can do to try and do things like reduce spam and you know, stop robots without sacrificing your user's ability to use the form.
Make buttons bigger, bolder, and different color. You see this a lot in, you know, especially some of the examples on abtest.com. You know, just changing the color of your button. And then, you know, that's why websites like Ninja Button exist. Is some, you know, just the color of the button. If people can't find the button that they're supposed to find, it's going to cause some problems with the conversions. So try changing the color of your button. The first thing you should always do, and we've talked about this before we've talked about this before in our usability episode, which was, and I think it was Eric Nielsen that did the study on this, was it was 6 people is all it takes to get rid of like 80 or 90% of the usability problems on your site. Totally. So I just suggest, you know, you do 5 usability tests on your friends, or if you have to go on the internet. On episode 39, we talked about the 5-second test, where you can upload a screenshot of your site and people can, you know, check out your site. Those 5 usability tests should probably be more more efficient. You'll probably find problems with your site faster than if you were to, you know, A/B split test and try to figure out,
right,
you know, what's wrong with your site. Just asking like some people, hey, can you try doing this? Another thing you can do too is go to your friend and pretend like you're kind of a salesman and guide him through this processes and sell them on the site and do it yourself. Sign up by mm-hmm. yourself and show them the process and see if you find some usability problems yourself. So oftentimes when we're programming, we kind of know how our app works and we kind of get blinded by some of the things and we kind of forget.
Totally. Absolutely. That happens a lot. You're like, of course this works, because in my head it works perfectly. Or I get it with like my writing. Of course my writing is perfect. It's right in my head. And even if it's written down wrong, when I read it in my head, it sounds and looks right. So you got to get someone else out there to look at it.
Here's another tip I really liked. Take screenshots of the form, you know, the changes that you've made, so that you know what you've tried in the past. It's just a really quick, easy way to document what the changes that you've tried already.
Totally.
And then you can upload them to A/B test.
Yeah, exactly. Tell people how it happened.
Another one is every site's different. You know, what works for Amazon may or may not work for you, but it, you know, it's a good place to check out ideas. But, you know, don't just read an article about changing something to red or blue makes a huge difference. Everything kind of varies. So don't get caught up into that. Try things out for yourself. Right. Especially, you know, the creative things like the Mad Lib style. Those are the ones that are really going to change your conversion.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you have a bright red theme on your website, then changing your button to red probably won't increase conversions.
Some really good, great, well, it's only one book, I guess, that I have here. But
it's a monster, right?
It's a monster, and it's like the book. I'm, you know, at least I couldn't imagine having any more information. It's like information overload. And that book is called Complete Monitoring. It goes into the details about how to set up all of this stuff, all kinds of tools, and very cool stuff. So if you're kind of getting into it, I mean, it's probably not a book you're going to read cover to cover. It's going to be more like a reference book. But I got it and I liked it, and it's a good reference for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, Yeah, it's a great book too. I've peeked at it a little bit while you have it, and I'll have to get a copy for myself as well. So that wraps up for this episode of Face Off. If you have any tips or thoughts or notes on, you know, optimizing your forms or anything we have to, go to faceoffshow.com. You can find this episode in the list, comment on it, or tweet us out, send us an email. Love to hear from you guys, because this is a cool subject. It's kind of the unsexy part of your website. You know, I mean, I know when I'm programming forms, like I use the web developer toolbar to fill it out automatically, because it's just a pain in the mm-hmm. butt to, you know, program these forms, and they're boring and stupid. But, you know, take that on as a challenge, is try and improve it the best you can and really look at it, because it's a very important part of your website. So go to faceoffshow.com. Tell us about your form follies or any other tips or tricks you have on getting form conversions. Also, if you haven't subscribed to the show, you can do so by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can subscribe via RSS, email, all kinds of cool ways to get the show delivered to you every time and every week. You can also leave feedback going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. As we said, if you want to comment on the episode, tweet us out. Love to hear from you guys. Thank you for listening to the show. We really do appreciate it. You guys are awesome, and we will see you next week.